Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, April the 30th. And this is our State Capitol Report, when we recap the action from under the State Capitol Dome each week and look ahead to what will be making headlines in the week to come. And while we have a bunch of bills to talk about with our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, we always welcome questions to you about the legislation we're discussing. Or if you just want to know whatever happened to this proposal or that proposal, those calls are welcome to 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Sean Johnson joins me again in the studio. Good morning.
Morning, Joy.
Now, last week in the State Capitol Report, we talked with you some about, and we also heard from the author, one of the authors of the Video Competition Act. State Representative Phil Montgomery was on the State Capitol Report predicting that this bill, which would allow cable and cable competitors to negotiate with the state for their franchise rather than local communities. He was saying that this was a good idea, good for consumers, good for cable rates, that they would go down presumably with the competition. And he expected this bill to pass, but he wasn't quite right on that passage part, was he, Sean?
Not quite. A lot of people were saying this bill was on the fast track. Mm-hmm. It was slowed considerably last week. The Senate basically put the brakes on it, said we're going to refer this to the legislature's budget committee and see how much it costs exactly, because there's been a variety of fiscal notes attached to it since it was introduced. And in the assembly, it had the votes to pass. They took a vote that put it in final form, and, you know, Democrats and Republicans did support it, but the final vote was delayed for a couple weeks.
Yeah, so what is the holdup? Is just how much is this going to cost the state, or are there other concerns about this bill?
There are plenty of other concerns, and the cost, it might not be, you know, huge compared to what you see from other bills or from the budget that they're debating right now at the Capitol. Ultimate fiscal note might be nowhere near that, maybe $1 million, I think I heard. One person say, others have suggested it's far less, but there's still some real concerns about what this bill would do. And basically, the general idea behind the bill is it wipes out all these cable franchise deals that individual cities and towns have negotiated with cable companies over the years, and it replaces them with the statewide video franchising, where basically it's the state that issues these agreements. Mm-hmm. And the thought from sponsors is that this will make it easier for other competitors to get in the marketplace. And that's something that you heard a Schwabenon Republican sponsor, Phil Montgomery, say time again. He says opening up the cable market to more competitors will result in better customer service.
When your provider has numerous outages, rather than having government give you that money back, what this bill does allows you to walk down the street to their competitor that says our service is better.
And what he was talking about there is right now, if your cable goes out for more than 4 hours and it's a provider's fault, you're entitled to a partial refund for the time that mm-hmm. your cable is out. This bill would bump it up to a day, where a provider would have to have their service out for a day. But Montgomery says you're still better off, because if that happens a lot, you just you switch providers. You know, whether or not you're going to have that kind of competition in the marketplace immediately is certainly debatable.
Mm-hmm. And I know that we will be talking with Barry Orton, a UW telecommunications professor, coming up after 7:30 to hear more about this bill. But I know there's also a lot of concern over, I don't know, AT&T is a big backer of this and apparently has been spending money to put a lot of ads on TV and apparently contributing to a lot of campaigns. Is that?
And also they've hired a number of lobbyists for this mm-hmm. bill. I think about 15 lobbyists are working on this piece of legislation. So that shows you how important it is to them. Mm-hmm. So obviously they stand to benefit a great deal if it passes. And that's something that some lawmakers kind of seized on in the debate last week. Sun Prairie Democrat Gary Hebel said that every day that this bill gets delayed is for the better. He represents a community that would lose out on some extra funding it collects to pay for its public access programming.
All I ask of you
is take the time necessary to put out a bill that we can really be proud of, and not one that is purchased by corporations at the behest of lobbyists that have cornered many of us in the hallways here.
So in any case, it has been referred to the Joint Finance Committee, the bill, for examination of its cost.
In the Senate, it has, mm-hmm. yeah. And, you know, Democrats there insisted that this was simply routine, although sometimes a bill with a fiscal note like this one will just get sort of, you know, they call it dipped into the Finance Committee and then taken back out and voted on. The Assembly Committee, the Assembly version of this bill should get a vote probably next week.
All right. We will watch more for that. And we will hear, as I mentioned, from telecommunications expert Barry Orton coming up after 7:30. So, listeners, if you do have more questions about this bill, you can save them for after 7:30. Or you can send them now via email to talk@wpr.org and include your first name and your community with your email. And we will continue talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about other issues being debated under the state capitol dome as our state capitol report continues. After this weather break, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the State Capitol Report. Every Monday at this time, between 7 and 8, we review the big happenings in state government from the previous week and look ahead to the week to come with Sean Johnson, our state government reporter, and usually other guests as well, including other experts, advocates, and lawmakers. We will be talking more about the Cable Competition Act, the Video Competition Act that's in the state legislature right now with Barry Orton, a professor of telecommunications at UW-Madison, coming up after 7:30. But continuing now with Sean Johnson on other action from the state legislature in the past week or so. Sean, I saw a number of different bills that were either getting hearings or votes in committee, and some pretty interesting bills, too. Here's one that I want you to explain a little bit. Bright green license plates that would identify Wisconsin's worst sexual offenders got an okay in a committee last week. That this is advancing in the state legislature.
Yeah, the sponsor of that plan chairs the committee, so no surprise that he'd bring that to a quick vote up there.
What would this do then? If you were convicted of being a sexual offender, you'd have to have a bright green license plate on your car.
Yeah, and it wouldn't apply to everyone. It would be like child sex offenders, violent sex offenders. It'd be largely the same people who the state's going to have to now monitor using GPS tracking. They'd also have, it's at that point, it's as simple as it sounds, a bright green license plate on their car so that when, you know, they're driving down the street or if they park wherever, the public would have an idea that there's a sex offender nearby.
Yeah, so is this one of those bills that might pass the Assembly but won't pass the Senate?
It's bills that have to do with sex offenders have had a pretty good track record at the Capitol lately because people don't want to vote against them, even if they have concerns. This particular bill, I think you saw a few Democrats vote against it in committee, which is more than you've seen on some of these sex offenders bills.
Mm-hmm.
One of the Democrats I know, when the public hearing came up on this, wore a homemade red letter A to signify a scarlet letter, saying that this was basically a scarlet letter bill and that there's no evidence that public shame does anything to curb this kind of crime. The sponsor's answer to this was basically, you know, people deserve the right to know where these offenders are at all times, and that, you know, there's no evidence that this works because Wisconsin would be a pioneer in this.
I see here that Wisconsin hospitals would have to provide emergency contraception to rape victims under a bill that had a public hearing last week. What's this all about?
Right now it's certainly an option that a number of hospitals will use when a rape victim it comes to them. This would require, though, that hospitals tell a rape victim that this is an option for them, and And to have some emergency contraception on site in case the victim chooses to go that route.
Yeah. Any major opposition to something like this?
This is one where some of the usual foes of a bill like this kind of stood on the sidelines. The Wisconsin Catholic Church or Catholic Conference, excuse me, said that it wouldn't oppose this bill as long as its hospitals could still, test for pregnancy and didn't have to administer the pills to women who test show were pregnant. Wisconsin Right to Life also, stood on the sidelines on this one, didn't take a position. You did have Pro-Life Wisconsin say that, they see this as innocent human life, and So they came out and testified against it.
Did I see a bill that passed at least a committee? I'm not sure if maybe it passed the entire body, but it was on the traveling sales companies that employ young people usually to go sell magazines or something else door to door.
Yeah, that one passed the full Senate, mm-hmm. and whether or not it'll have a chance in the Assembly remains to be seen. It's an issue that's been brought up before at the Capitol. And really, you first started to see a push for this type of legislation back in 1999 when a van carrying teenagers who were working for traveling sales crew crashed and killed seven. This bill would basically have the state regulate these companies, and they'd have to hire their employees as employees rather than independent contractors who aren't subject to labor laws. So, they'd have to add regulations on work hours and pay. They'd have to tell their workers where they'll work and how much they'll be paid, which are things that sponsors say aren't always spelled out right now.
Yeah. And not finally, but another effort to expand the do not call telemarketing list in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And really the big thing there is the extra fines, I think, mm-hmm. would give the no call list more teeth. And it would also specifically apply the list to cell phone numbers, which, while you can sign up a cell phone number right now, it's not spelled out explicitly in state law.
The Joint Finance Committee has been all along, either taking testimony or working on budget issues. There was a pretty fiery debate last week when it came to a fee for small businesses. Is that what's going on there?
Yeah. And last week was, as long as they've been meeting this year, it seems like this was the first time they've gotten together and voted on any piece of this year's mm-hmm. budget. And so you got a taste of what it's going to be like on some of these votes. I think there were 12 votes or about a dozen votes where lawmakers split on that committee 8-8 on issues. The one you're talking about was this proposal in the governor's budget that would charge small businesses a fee if they file their taxes on paper.
As opposed to electronically?
Right, yeah. As opposed to electronically. And the idea is, we're going to get more of these people to file their taxes electronically because that's easier for the state. It's more efficient for them. And this was a situation where you heard Democrats really, going to bat for the governor on this one, as you're going to hear throughout the budget debate. Milwaukee Democratic Senator Lena Taylor, stood firm with her party in defending the proposal.
This is something you're making a mountain out of a molehill, so you have something for a press release. This is ridiculous that we're spending this kind of energy on something that encourages businesses to move into the new day of greater technology.
I should have set that up a little better. She was responding to some of her Republican colleagues there who were calling this a tax on a tax, saying that, not only are you're doing what you're supposed to and paying your tax to the state, but to add insult to injury, the state's now going to charge you for, following the steps and doing it on paper.
Yeah. So the proposal is that if you're a small business, not if you're a big business,
a small business,
if you're a small business and you don't file electronically through the internet, you're going to get charged $5.
Right. Right. And right now that applies to more than 500,000 businesses.
And the governor's proposing this because?
Well, I think the goal behind the proposal is to get more people to file electronically because it's more efficient for, you know, the revenue department to take.
It's a stick to get
people.
It's
easier for them. Yeah, instead of the instead of a carrot, it's the stick. Yeah, is how some Republicans put it. Elkhart Lake Assemblyman Steve Castell was one of those who, you know, really didn't buy the Democrats' argument on this one.
We might sit here and say, well, it's only $5 because they're inconveniencing us. No, we're inconveniencing them by forcing us to be our tax collectors. And then, if you don't do it the way we want you to do it, we're going to punish you by charging you a fee. And it's not the $5. It's the absolute insult to these people and the arrogance of government to think that this is a good idea.
What wasn't the only speech you heard like that from Republicans on this? So,
and Joint Finance will vote on more budget items this week.
They're scheduled to vote on more budget items this week. A lot of the big stuff, it's going to be a while before you you know, see any votes on that, and probably have to be resolved by legislative leaders.
Now, I noticed that there's going to be some action, or at least a public hearing, on campaign finance reform proposals this week, tomorrow, in fact.
Yeah, and these are a few that are sort of targeted at the recent Supreme Court race, and these are proposals by Democrats. One of them would increase public financing for Supreme Court races. Another one would require donors behind so-called issue ads that are, you know, currently can go anonymous to report who they are if it's within a couple months of an election. And then another one would require circuit or court clerks to inform parties in civil suits that judges must declare any conflicts of interest or withdraw from the cases.
Does this have to do with, in any way, Supreme Court Justice-elect Annette Ziegler's current conflict of interest or ethics violations?
Yes, that's the short answer. Ziegler was she's kind of facing this on two fronts right now. The ethics board filed a complaint against her. She's being investigated by the state's judicial commission. But the allegation in her case is that she sat on cases involving the West Bend Savings Bank, where her husband sits on the board of directors. Mm-hmm. So this would be right at Ziegler's situation.
You know, Sean, we only have a minute to go, and I know that you also covered a vote on whether the state legislature should have some oversight in the gaming compacts that the governor negotiates with Indian tribes. We don't have time for playing some of the debate there, but very briefly, what happened there, and is this going anywhere?
Sure. This bill passed the Assembly. It's not going to be brought up in the Senate, where Democrats control that chamber. They also control the governor's office. Right now, the governor has final say on approving off-reservation gaming compacts. Some legislators say that, you know, no one person should have that that amount of power. But, of course, you know, there's other issues at play. Who's in charge of the governor's office at the time kind of determines where you're going to land on this issue. And also, you know, where you're at in the state kind of determines it as well.
We'll have to leave it there for now. Thanks very much, Sean.
Thanks, Joy.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on this Monday, April the 30th. It's about 7:36. And as we heard from Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter Sean Johnson in our last half hour, the Video Competition Act was stalled last week in the state legislature. The Senate sent it back to the Joint Finance Committee to figure out its financial implications. We heard from the author of this bill, or one of the co-authors anyway, State Representative Phil Montgomery, at this time last week, and he was telling us why this bill is a good thing for consumers and why he was predicting its passage. We will now see if our guest in this half hour agrees or not. He is Barry Orton, a professor of telecommunications at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is a consultant to telecommunications regulators and is the editor of the blog, WaxingAmerica.com. He writes in the telecommunications section. And we welcome your questions about this video franchising bill, what is being called the Video Competition Act. Wondering if you want this bill or not. What questions you have about it? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. And Professor Barry Orton joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
You don't think that Wisconsin needs this bill?
Nope.
Why not?
I think it's a bill that's been set up to allow one large company, AT&T, to have easy access to a market that it would otherwise have to spend some money to get into and spend some time to get into the way that cable companies did, which is to get franchises from local governments.
Yeah, and AT&T and presumably other competitors don't want to negotiate with local communities about this?
Here in Wisconsin, it's primarily AT&T that's pushing this bill. It's pushing the same bill in Illinois, the same bill in Ohio. It got something like it passed in Indiana, and it's pushing it in Tennessee and in Florida and a bunch of other states. What basically happens here is AT&T is desperate to get into the video business, and it's desperate to do it on the cheap. It wants to spend less money wiring the state than other companies would have to, and it wants to do it by a bill that it wrote to allow it to serve where it wants to serve and not serve, more importantly, where it doesn't want to serve. Most municipalities require a cable company to serve the whole city, and AT&T is arguing that that will produce a system that would cost it too much money. And so its bill would allow it to essentially serve anybody. The bill doesn't impose real oversight. It's a smokescreen that ignores consumer interests, and it gained support largely because AT&T and Big Telecom are throwing around a lot of money for campaign contributions. If you read the Capital Times last week, the lead editorial on the 24th was "The Foul Smell of Campaign Cash."
I don't understand, if you could help us understand why this would allow AT&T to do this on the cheap. Why is it so much cheaper to negotiate with the state than it would be the way it is now?
Because the bill doesn't allow state negotiation. The bill makes the state accept the franchise sight unseen, essentially, and put it in a file. The bill specifically doesn't give the state any power of any significance to have oversight over either the phone company or the cable companies, which would begin getting their state franchises as well and abandoning their municipal franchises. So it's a sham. It's not real state oversight. It is the appearance of oversight without any power.
Mm. And what happens, we've heard a lot of concern from local cable access channels, very concerned that they're just going to go away under this bill. Is that still the case?
Well, the bill has been improved with regard to access quite a bit. It's not as bad as it was originally. It still has one major flaw, and that is the funding for public educational and governmental access would be cut off after either 3 years or if the franchise is up for renewal, whichever comes first. And right now, that bill would leave some specific places, West Allis, Sheboygan, Stevens Point, Wausau, and Ashwaubenon, out in the cold, and the taxpayers would either have to pick up the costs or those public education government access channels would go out of business. So it's really a fix, this bill, and it's a fix for the cable companies, and it's a fix for AT&T. The losers would be subscribers and taxpayers, and I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
The current bill, the first bill that was written, had almost no power for the state, and it had no consumer rights as well. That bill has been modified so that some consumer rights have been added back in, mm-hmm. and some very minimal powers for the state has been added back in. The first bill had a fiscal note, how much it would cost the taxpayers. And the fiscal note was $312,800 for Department of trade and consumer protection to do minimal consumer protection, mm-hmm. and it had $219,500 a year for the Department of Financial Institutions to do minimal, and I mean very minimal, oversight of the franchises. The bill has been amended. It has been made somewhat better. And by made so much better, it means it was added consumer rights. It added some powers to the Department of Financial Institutions. But there hasn't been yet an honest fiscal note for how much those additional powers would cost. If the first note added up to slightly over $500,000 to do nothing, then to do something significant has got to be much more expensive. So that's why it went to joint finance, mm-hmm. because taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin, in my estimate, would wind up paying at least $1 million for minimal oversight, and that $1 million would come out of taxpayers' pockets, mm-hmm. not AT&T's or the cable companies. The big change that in the bill that really means that the state spends more money is that the satellite dishes were added to the customer protection rights. So that's never happened before. So it means that satellite customers could complain to the state and would have specific consumer rights that they never had before, and that, of course, is going to cost the state more money. So my question is going to be, are we going to get an honest fiscal note, which really says what the cost would be of the bill we are now looking at, the amended bill, or are we going to sweep this off the table and say, it's not going to cost any money, don't worry about it, and consumers are going to save all this money? You've seen all those advertisements. There's a reason that AT&T, through a sock puppet group called TV for Us, is spending millions of dollars, literally millions, like a political campaign does, to convince consumers. You've seen those ads on TV and on radio over and over and over again. The consumers of Wisconsin would save up to $100-some million. Well, that up to is the real trick. Because if you look at the reality of what happens when you do get a second cable company, you do get this competition. We have it in Chicago. We have it in the East Coast, where Verizon has been very active. What happens is the rates go down slightly for a little while, and then they come back up, and they keep going up every year. And even when the phone company gets in the business, they still have to pay the cost of ESPN. They still have to pay the cost of HBO, which, of course, they're reselling to the consumers. And those prices go up and up and up. So there's not going to be any real savings for consumers, and taxpayers are going to wind up paying more for state regulation. If this bill was serious about state regulation, it would put it where there's expertise, which is at the PSC. Real oversight at the PSC, where they have expertise, procedures, and they already know the difference between an electric line, a telephone line, and a cable line on a pole, is already available. The staff is already there, but that's the last place that the industry wants to be regulated, because those regulators know what they're doing.
Our guest is Barry Orton, a professor of telecommunications at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we're talking about this bill that's in the state legislature called the Video Competition Act. Well, what do you think of this bill now? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, I'll talk with the author of the new book, With Speed and Violence, Why Scientists Fear Tipping Points in Climate Change. That's coming up after 8. Right now, we're getting another perspective, a different perspective on the Video Competition Act. That's a bill before the state legislature that supporters say would open up the cable market to other competitors and eventually, according to its supporters, save consumers money and give them more choices. Our guest in this half hour disagrees. Barry Orton is a professor of telecommunications at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he says this legislation would not be a good deal for taxpayers or consumers, but would be a good deal for a company like AT&T. And our lines are full at the moment. Let's go right to the phones. Jim and Racine, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, with the local franchises, do local governments have some fees that they get for that? And with state with the state taking over control of that, are local governments going to lose a source of funding?
No, the fees are essentially a rental for the use of the rights-of-way. They're called a franchise fee, and they're 5% of gross revenue. And the current deal on the bill, the original bill would have cities lose revenue. The current bill has them losing slightly, but not very much anymore. They've been their fees have been restored. So city taxpayers who own that rights-of-way jointly would be compensated a reasonable amount of rent for the use of the rights-of-way. It's not a tax, it's a rent. And subscribers, cable subscribers, essentially pay that for the cost of doing business.
Thank you very much, Jim, for the call. Ann in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Ann, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much. I just wanted to tell you, a friend of mine who lives in Michigan pays less than $20 a month for the same service I pay $76 a month for here in Milwaukee.
And that's because you think they have this competition going on, Ann?
Yes, yes.
Well, yeah. I think you have to look very carefully at what they get for what they pay and how long they're going to pay it. What happens when you get this very short-lived price competition is there are bargains, but those bargains are very short-lived. They're short-term contracts, and then the price goes right up again after the introductory time. Wow. So I'd be very, very skeptical about that price differential. ESPN doesn't give their programs away.
Thank you.
Yeah, and under this, AT&T or another competitor would have to, set up their own various channels or programming
right.
and that sort of
thing? They would have to buy the programming mm-hmm. just like the cable company does from the program suppliers and resell it to the public. What the difference with AT&T's plan is, they call it U-verse, and the difference is twofold. One, that AT&T would not offer it to everybody. It would only be offered to their so-called high-value customers, which means you could have a place in Milwaukee, say, for example, the near North Side, that wouldn't have it at all, and they would offer a satellite service, which they're offering now, instead. So you would have kind of a digital divide among even within a city or within neighborhoods. Here in Madison, perhaps the AT&T wouldn't wire the South Side. The second thing that AT&T is doing differently is they are using their same old copper phone wire for the last mile to your home. They're running fiber to a big box in your neighborhood, and then they're using that as a giant channel selector. So when you change your channel, you're telling the box in your neighborhood, send me a different channel, because they can only send three or four TV signals down that little wire. It's an attempt to do television on the cheap, to do it with a technology that's really, at this point, 50 to 100 years old, and it's an attempt to do it on the cheap in terms of who they serve and how they serve.
Thank you, Ann, for the call. And Professor Orton, I kind of relate to Ann. I think I'm paying about $75 a month, too, for basic cable. I don't get any of the premium channels.
No. You're paying $75 for extended basic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. is only the over-the-air signals. As soon as you get into ESPN, CNN, Fox News, all those other channels, that's not basic cable. That's extended
mm-hmm.
basic.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole bunch of programs that the cable company pays significant dollars to the program supplier to send to you.
Yeah. I guess my point being is that a lot of people are kind of grumbling about their cable television rates, and they think that competition will lower those.
They think that because of the thousands and thousands of commercials mm-hmm. that we've seen over the last year, full-page ads, radio commercials every hour, television commercials every hour. They have to spend all that money on those commercials to sell you something. The chances are very, very good that the reason they're having to spend that much money is to convince you something that isn't true. Yeah. The rates do go up for cable, and they're going to go up for telephone-based cable just as fast over the long run.
Sylvia in Richmond is with us now. Hi, Sylvia. On the air.
Hi, Joy. Thank you for taking my call. I live in subsidized housing, so I can't afford a lot of cable programs, but the ones I do have, I pay $48 for, and that's Rapid Cable. I have the digital box, and I get a lot of channels, but they keep cutting out and disconnecting and coming back, so it's very irritating to have service like that.
No, that
and
sounds like
I was
answer.
Told that by someone in consumer protection that we don't have federal regulations anymore, and I'd just like to know why that is.
Because the Congress of the United States, your representatives, decided in 1996 when the Republicans were running both the House and the Senate that we didn't need to regulate cable very much anymore, and they prohibited local governments from regulating those rates. The rates that you complain about that go up and up and up have been deregulated by the federal government. And what this new law would do would be take away the last vestiges of local power, which includes regulation of the customer service quality, the signal quality, the kind of thing you're talking about, from local governments. Right now, the place to complain, if you're getting that problem, would be with your municipal government. As of today, they still have the power to regulate and to control the quality of customer service if it gets too bad. But this bill would take that away completely and give it to nobody. It would be kind of a Wild West marketplace decides what happens. And that's the basis of this bill. The basis of the bill is that the marketplace will decide. Government has no place in this, and they've given it to a agency, the Department of Financial Institutions, that regulates banks and knows nothing about cable television, and that's the idea. It's a sham.
Governor Doyle said when this was first proposed that he was concerned about the lack of consumer protections in the bill, such
right.
as what to do when there's outages or
right.
such things. Has any of that been added to,
yeah,
to this bill?
Yeah, that's been restored. Mm-hmm. There's a series of protections, consumer protections, that say if the cable goes out for over a four-hour period or over a day, you get a rebate. That was stripped out of law by the first version of the bill. It's been added back after we've argued about it very mm-hmm. strongly. The sponsor of the bill did not want it in there. It's been added back in, and as I said, they've added in satellite dishes as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be some consumer protection on the state level. The problem simply is, as always, that if you make a complaint to the state government, there's going to have to be enough complaints for them to act on it. And quite frankly, the state government is pretty stretched pretty thin. It doesn't really care and doesn't have the wherewithal to care about specific individual problems unless they mount up into great numbers.
So Professor Orton, in your informed point of view, should the state just keep things the way they are, or is there something that can further be done to this this legislation that would make it acceptable?
Well, I think the best thing that the state did, that this legislation does, is add satellite dishes to consumer protection. But this is a case of it's not broken, it doesn't need fixing, it's a special favor for one large company, and it also benefits all the cable companies because it strips local control from them as well. It's really an anti-consumer bill in sheep's clothing of protecting consumers and helping them get more money. But as I said, anytime somebody has to spend millions of dollars on commercials under somebody else's name to convince you of something, I'd be very suspicious.
Jim in Oconomowoc is with us next. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good morning. This is a great program. It shows how public radio really works to local issues. Hopefully a lot of people are listening. I do have one question that's slightly on a topic, but it's a little different. Professor, are cable companies eventually going to really provide a true subscriber type of package to people where we could say, look, I don't want the human growth or the Oxygen Channel or ESPN, but I do want X, Y, and Z.
You want a la carte.
Is that coming down the pike somewhere along the line? And I'll take
it
my
should
answer.
Be. I agree it should be. You want a la carte service. You want to be able to pick and choose the channels and only pay for those and not pay for the channels you don't watch, correct?
Absolutely.
And that would be a great thing. The industry is against it. This bill doesn't help for that. There's been rumblings about that for 20 years. The industry would really hate it because it would really cut back on their revenues. I think that's the best thing they can do to be consumer friendly. That's why people really want this kind of bill and this kind of change because they're really aggravated at paying for channels they don't like.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Jim, for the call. And Professor Orton, thank you so much for being with us.
Anytime. If people want to read more about my opinions on this, they can go to www.waxingamericaoneword.com.
We'll read more about it. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Anytime.
Barry Orton, professor of telecommunications at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a consultant to telecommunications regulators, editor of the blog waxingamerica.com. And we thank Karen Prager for producing this hour and for on-air production as well. And we thank you for listening and for calling in. Our spring pledge drive starts this Thursday, but you don't have to wait to make a contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio. Your online pledge right now will help shorten this upcoming pledge drive. Every dollar raised online before Thursday will count toward the goal of $275,000. And we will end this drive when we reach that goal. So go online, WPR.org, and make a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. And thank you. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.